Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
Hi guys, I'm Matt, and I am half of Roleplay Chat. Roleplay Chat is a podcast and passion project from two game masters who can't stop talking about role-playing games. We talk about games like Dungeons & Dragons, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the Fate Core system, Call of Cthulhu, and many more. In Roleplay Chat, Chris and I take deep dives into tabletop RPG subjects. We touch on topics ranging from something as simple as traps, all the way to abstract concepts like pacing or engagement at your table. Chris and I take you through unscripted chats, showcasing our roleplay strategies, providing you with concrete tools in the aim of improving as a player or as a game master. Our bi-weekly show can be found wherever you podcast. Just look for Roleplay Chat. That's R-O-L-E, Play Chat.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Tabletopped. Today, we are going to be talking about homebrewing, exploration, and party mechanics. We wanted to just delve in and make sure that, you know, all of the things that we value, like tempo, the pillars of play, start really having a little bit more effect at the table during exploration. Rio came up with some ideas that I'm really excited to get into. So, first, why don't we tell who's here to talk about it? All right, I'm your host, Nick. I run this table sometimes, but I'm making sultry, long eye contact with one of my co-hosts.
Our second one.
This is nice. The second one in this recording session. Who are you?
You're engaged.
are we having a work affair?
Oh, my God.
Are we?
Well,
is this our B plot?
Who is it with?
I'm Rio. Hi. Rio.
Do you want to tell us what your party role is?
What?
Yeah. What role do you fill in the party?
I'm the party.
You are the party. The party doesn't stop till Rio walks in.
That's right. I mean, it doesn't start. Oh my God, you burned me on using the word, and I didn't. Now I'm. Egg on my face.
I feel like I really broke you there. I'm so sorry. Why don't we move on?
Oh, man, that was mean.
All right. I meant start. I just misspoke to say.
Wow.
What about you? Who's this other voice?
Hi, I'm Shade, and my role in the party is to be the somber one.
the sad drunk in the corner.
I guess so.
And I guess I am the DJ. All right, let's continue on. So, Rio, I'm so sorry about what just happened. I hope we can put that behind us.
Well, it definitely ruined our romance.
Yeah, that romance
that's
is dead.
Gone.
Probably for the best, honestly.
Yeah. I didn't really see much of a future here.
You came to us and we're talking about how you wanted to create sort of, not a secondary class, but a role that a character can choose within a party. Can you tell a little bit about this idea and then we'll kind of extrapolate it out into this whole sort of exploration mechanic?
So, in a TTRPG, and you know 5e is kind of like our through line. You choose your class, and your class does a lot of stuff for making your character, but it's mostly based for combat. And exploration gets like not a lot of table time.
Yeah.
So basically, what I'm suggesting and trying to build for my homebrew is roles. Which obviously you roll dice and you have a roll and they're spelled differently and I think it's confusing. So maybe like the name could be changed.
Yeah.
But it's like after you've picked your class and you've made your character.
Party positions.
You kind of have what you know what your skills are.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a sort of like based on what your class can do, how do you put out different roles for the party? And this is specifically designed, are intended to function for making the exploration pillar of the game sort of like more involved, more gamey, and something that you can more interact with instead of like, oh, you walk across 12 miles of land. Roll. Okay, no random encounters.
Yeah, and something that you were talking about too that this solves for that I think is really interesting because we've talked about this before, but I have a really hard time with exploration in games. I usually sort of am like, you decide to move out and after a journey, you're there, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But one thing that this solves for that I thought was interesting was that you would have, for example, one of the ones that you kind of threw out there was the Vanguard, was it? Or no, the Pathfinder. The Pathfinder, right. Someone who is leading the group through the forest and is
setting the pace, and their roles determine kind of like what you're going to run into and how well you get there.
And a couple of things that this solves for that I really like is that you then, one thing that happens probably at every table is like, can you roll me a survival check to see if you like notice the wolves approaching you or whatever? You roll. It's like maybe a failure, maybe it's a middle of the road roll, and then like three other people go, I also want to check, and then they also roll survival because they have high modifiers, right. Which and is great.
But you've already acknowledged that there's something happening.
Yeah, exactly. And then it also slows down. We talked about tempo recently. It slows down pace of play as this sort of stuff happens. I like the idea that like as the Pathfinder, you're making your way through the woods. So if you're going to get lost, it's because of the person who's like leading them
and
through the woods.
And you have a spotter whose job is to have the high passive perception to know when something's about to attack the party.
Yeah.
And that is the one role that you roll against.
Yeah. And we were also talking about this a little bit, Shade, and we were about to get into it, but I sort of suggested like, oh, it would be interesting if this was tied into your main class as well. Like if you're in the woods and there's like some sort of animal approaching that could be dangerous, like the druid would be the one to kind of like perk up and be like, there's something that is different in the air, or maybe like the ranger or something. And you could have these kind of like class groups that would do different sort of roles. But you guys were sort of like, I like the idea of like picking these. So why don't you guys talk about that a little bit?
Obviously, because I feel like with the classes, there's a lot of like, oh, we need a tank, we need a support, and like you choose your classes based on how you. And I feel like this should be after you do all of that, because it shouldn't be min-maxy. It should just be like, okay, you're this group of people. How would this group of people set up their marching order, and how would they function together? And obviously, you know, the wisdom classes would have higher perception, higher. It would probably default to that, but I don't want it tied to your class decision. The druid is the person who does this. I want them to be two separate aspects of building a character and building a party.
Yeah, so this would get into it. It got me thinking about just essentially creating an entirely different system.
Yeah.
Wherein, you know, because D&D 5e has, you know, the three pillars of play, which are your combat, your exploration, and your social. And I think it might be interesting to have essentially class types for each pillar. So
I was going to bring this up too, of like, does this mean like if you're in a talking encounter that you'd have someone be the face as a role? You know what I mean? Like, well, do that kind of thing.
I mean, yeah, you could do that if you're a very like, you know, hey, we're going to plan our party thoughtfully. Or you could just have a bunch of people who were oops all warlocks. And
here's how I envision a game going with this system. It's like your class deals with combat. Your role deals with exploration. And then the social aspect of the game. So it's like the social doesn't have to be tied to anything, because like this, you want to talk to this character? Great. This is a social encounter. It's you as the player improving. You don't need the one person to do that.
Yeah.
Everyone can, like, whoever's talking can talk and say their lines, and that becomes more of like a...
But to your point, though, how many times has it happened in a game where someone says, like, we're this group of whatevers, and then someone's like, whoa, we're actually, like, we're this or whatever. Like the people trying to edit each other to try to get a through line that is, like, a group agreed upon sort of thing rather than one person just making sort of decisions on the fly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think in a social game where everyone wants to talk, like, how do you gamify a conversation?
Yeah. And also, I think that one thing that I'm worried about with this sort of system would be, like, people feeling like they can't contribute in some way. So I feel like it just, we would need to figure out, because like for exploration, it feels a little bit easier because you can just kind of pick the role. You know what I mean? Like you say like, hey, for this one, I'm going to be the watcher because like my character, you know, is really on high alert after that last combat. And so like, that's what he's like focused on. And someone else could be like, yeah, I'm going to be the Pathfinder because she doesn't want to be with the party right now. She wants to kind of go out and scout ahead a little bit and just be alone. Like things like that, like you could use sort of like more.
And again, that's why the roles are basically what's, what skills are being used by which player.
Yeah.
And they don't have to be set in stone forever like a class. Like you can just be, I'm going to be a cleric for this adventure. I'm going to be a ranger for this next encounter. Like, it'd be like the roles are basically like, what's your marching order? These are the positions that need to be filled.
I do like it as a kind of like a tacit agreement with the GM of like, we are deciding who gets to roll on certain types of things.
Exactly.
And like maybe the Vanguard gets to make the survival rolls, but there's like a higher chance of an ambush. So like maybe that's something that they have to think about. You know, who wants to fill that role? Is it the tank who maybe doesn't have like the highest survival, or is it the ranger, but it also gets like, you know.
The, like in my head, if you're in the rear guard, to me what that means is when the GM sets up an encounter, the rear guard is in between the rest of the party and the ambushing enemy.
The people behind,
so they're going to be the first targets. So there's really no roles that the rear guard has to make. You're just like, if we get ambushed,
I'm the bullet sponge.
We're going to be the front line against that attack.
I like that as a sort of like agreement between players and GMs. But Shade, what do you think about like this is like a homebrew? Does it feel, because I feel like it can go, you could use this as a system agnostic sort of thing as well, where when you're like doing, even in something that is like very rules light, like Dread, it could just be a way to determine who is making a pull, you know what I mean? In like a surprise situation. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea to do, because it does add a little bit of crunch to your exploration, which is one of the challenges for exploration in any TTRPG. It just kind of becomes, you know, okay, cool. Why are we worrying about resource management and things like this? This isn't what I thrive on personally. But you can, just because a lot of times it just kind of comes down to greats. You know, Franco, can you cast Goodberry? You're a druid character. I wanted to say that so much during our last one. I was just like, dude, you have Goodberry, right? Just cast Goodberry. Or something like that. But if
that's
you
why
add,
he's in prison.
Yeah.
But didn't feed the party.
But if you add a little more crunch to it with this, you know, it becomes interesting, especially with things like the formation. I think there's a lot there with formation kind of being, okay, your person at the front is going to be your person making your survival check or your perception check for finding things. Someone else is going to be responsible for setting up camp and doing food. But there need to be tangible consequences for these. And I think that gets into the tricky bit as well. So you know, is it a table of consequences? Is it what's determining those consequences, you think?
I mean, basically, like, the GM would have to set up sort of like, and as an adventure, what are the roles? But the way I was viewing it is like, I had one of the roles to what you were talking about is like the surveyor who picks the place to make camp. And basically, the surveyor makes a stealth check against the DM's random encounter table. And it's like, that we don't have to worry about keeping watch and rolling that, oh, I roll a perception. It's like, okay, it's a very roll the stealth check. I'm going to roll against that to see if there's a random encounter. And this is like, if you get ambushed or not.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, well, you've set this up, and now you've done it really fast. And now you can kind of like, you still rolled to affect things, but it's also moving a lot faster to get to the next part of the game.
This does feel a little bit like a way to change where the prep happens from in the middle of the game to pregame. You know what I mean? Like if you created like a table of like what interacts with what, like which roles would be responsible for what kind of skills or whatever. And then you like put that out for the party and said like, okay, like, hey, everyone, we're about to make a trip. Can everyone place themselves in this order?
I know this might be a little bit of a spoiler, and I'll talk around this as much as I can. But in our next game that I run for this group, the party is going to a place called the Sumner Terry Gardens, which is a large cemetery. And for that, I have put complications and things that will arrive based on how the Pathfinder rolls, how the Surveyor rolls. And I intend to have everyone like at the beginning of that next game do this. I'm like, okay. And I'll say one of the spoiler parts of this is like there is a, you know, you're in a cemetery. So let's say that there's a – someone has like, hey, if you guys run into a non-combat person who's a negotiator, who's the go-to person that's going to go up and start talking.
Yeah.
And like, okay, so you run into a random person in the cemetery. The negotiator chooses if they're going to do persuasion or intimidate to get information or find out who this person is and what they want.
Another thing that it sounds like you're kind of solving for is like how to mitigate successes as well, because mm-hmm. like in a lot of systems, your most common role is, or like common result of a role is going to be a mixed success. That's mm-hmm. what like you're kind of shooting for as a designer.
Right.
For D&D, especially at certain levels and with many people rolling, your variance is going to be such that you're probably going to have a full success, you know, at least 50% of the time, which is really yeah. high. And then you have a mixed success sort of thing, because I know it's sort of a binary, but there is like sort of a range in the middle of like, that's almost a success. It's not as bad as if you roll a one.
Yeah. Kind and of also thing. Like something that I run into a lot, because our, you know, our group is seven people.
Yep.
Or it's six now. Someone has dropped out. But you get that thing. It's like, okay, you guys walk into a dark room.
Yeah.
Now you have six people rolling perception. And
totally.
You have to like.
Well, this is what I'm saying.
It's
like
it changes the odds. And now you're like, okay, this one person is going to make. Everyone's going to agree that this person makes these rolls.
Yeah.
And that's what we go with.
I feel like it adds to the ability of like adding stakes a little bit, because mm-hmm. it allows you to fail a little bit more easier, or at yeah. least have a mixed success a little bit more easier.
And it's like your spotter keeps not seeing ambushes. You're like, okay, you're fired.
You're out. And the
now you
role.
Have like some story element, group dynamics, like to really work with. And like, okay, we've got to get this guy trained.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, okay, now we're going to quest to find eyeglasses for yeah. our spotter.
I also wonder if there's like a way that if you have somebody, like, again, this is more building a system to your point, Shade, but like if somebody, you could have experience like how many times you fulfill a role allows you to get bonuses on stuff. Like if you've been the spotter for the last five adventures or whatever, like trips or something, mm-hmm. that means that for this next trip you get to roll with advantage because you're just so, you're experienced at it at this point. You know what I mean? Or if you've had a certain amount of successes you could even do, and then failures just don't contribute to that number or something. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like
I really see this as like a chance to like, even in downtime, you can train. I feel like maybe like as you do this, you get like experience in these roles, and yeah. then maybe like, oh, the person who's been the spotter has now like a levels, has like a second level in spotting.
Yeah.
And there's a feat, or there's like some, okay, you get expertise and a skill involving wisdom. And that way the people who choose these roles early and stick with them get better at doing them, to your point.
Yeah.
There's a reward for doing the same thing over and over. There's a reward for letting this person be the pathfinder again and again and again.
Yeah.
That makes everyone a little bit better at it. And that kind of gives you like, because if you see like in a story or like any sort of like group dynamic, the longer people work together, the more their roles define and the more they and I think that tells a background story by having the roles develop and also gain experience separate from a class. Because if you've read Acquisitions Incorporated, there's like five ranks mm-hmm. to like the Documancer. Obviously, I'm really trying to be specific with exploration, and Acquisitions is very franchise broad. Guild running
yeah.
and not the same
roles. It's admin. Yeah.
Admin. But like in these roles that you have as you explore, get five ranks yeah. and it'll be like, okay, did you keep this role for like an entire adventure? Mm. Okay. And it becomes more subjective to like ranking off.
You could do this as a feat too.
You could also say take feats and get
and
these.
Say like, this is a feat. Like if you are, you know, the only one to check for enemies during or like check for ambushes
well,
during
you can still
exploration
get the feats as basic yeah. level up in your class. Like, oh, I'm going to take a feat that doesn't result to combat.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a feat that lets my role improve.
Yeah. Right. After this break, why don't we talk a little bit more about broader homebrewing of exploration and how we can like take these sort of things and put them into it. We will be back right after these messages.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletopped and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us. us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking about exploration homebrews. Before the break, Rio was really walking through an idea with us. Walking through the idea was telling us a little bit about this idea of having party roles that would also be during...
R-O-L-E.
Yes, exactly. That would be taking place during exploration and other pillars of the game. But I want to kind of expand it out because before we turn on the mics, we had different ideas for like how exploration works in general. Like even our exploration episode was a little bit like surface level-y because I feel like exploration, I don't know anybody who's really cracked it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Especially in D&D, it's not really catered to as much. I have a really hard time with exploration. I usually just skip that sort of like part of it. And exploration comes in controlled environments like dungeons and things like that. But what do you guys think? Are there any other homebrewed tools or mechanisms that you all use that make exploration feel interesting and dynamic? I know Franco really loves rolling on tables. I think that rolling on tables is a really great way to do it, but it also kind of feels to me a little bit like, oh, this is not part of the overall session that we're here with tonight because you're just rolling for extra stuff.
I love rolling on tables as part of prep, not as part of running the game.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That way you have time to be like, okay, I'm going to roll there's a poisoned vial.
Yeah.
And it's not like, okay, that's not something that's happening.
How do I connect that to something else? Yeah.
And you can, I love Franco's tables for prepping.
Yeah.
I think if you do tables in part of the game, you're going to end up with a very disjointed story that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think a table in the game is better suited for, the party has gone off the rails that I expected. Mm-hmm. And so let's go off rails. And here's a table of random things. Like, I like it for that. I also agree. I'm more table prep. And I think Franco would agree with that well, too.
I think in our last session, we did some exploration where you started going from one city to another. And I rolled to see what the random encounters were going to be before we started. Yeah. And then your roles in the session were just how do you interact with those random encounters?
Yeah.
And basically, that means you have to make a table of random encounters for the next stage of your adventure, mm-hmm. which is more in the prep area. I don't really think that's homebrewy. And doesn't really answer your question.
But the thing is for me, like, the thing, and this, I guess, is just going to my problems with GMing exploration, is that I have a problem with the idea, and maybe it's not a problem, but the random encounter as a general thing mm-hmm. feels to me like a GM being like, and this thing that doesn't matter happens because you meet a group of bandits on the highway and you beat them all and you keep going, but that doesn't have anything to do with where you're going or when you get there.
Right, yeah.
And so, like, that's the thing about exploration is like, how do you explore in a way that feels
because that just changes exploration into combat encounters.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes you get attacked by bandits.
Yeah. And I think that this kind of goes into how maybe we as a society view travel. And, you know, I'm going to limit it to our immediate experiences. But when was the last time you just set off on a wander? Specifically to wander.
This is a huge thing with you. Yeah, this is probably not often. I think the last time was actually fairly recently, but only because I was pet sitting a dog and I was just like, I gotta walk the dog.
The dog
is
gonna
wander.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and, fair enough.
You know, when you travel somewhere, you have a destination.
Yeah.
The trip itself, if you like right now, Franco is off on a big trip.
Whirlwind
right
adventure.
Yeah,
whirlwind adventure. They say in Muppet movies.
And it took a several hour plane ride to get there.
Yeah, it had to be pretty intentional.
I imagine he probably. I don't know this, but I imagine if I were him, I would have slept.
Yeah.
Most of it. What am I going to do with the plane?
Yeah,
I'm going to
watch encounters.
No encounters.
Yeah. And actually,
the
you know what?
The bathroom is full.
I will say I've had encounters on a plane ride. They're not fun.
Yeah.
Did you know that flight attendants don't get paid until the doors close? So all the bullshit they have to deal with for boarding and unboarding is unpaid time.
That would make me so frustrated. It also makes sense why they're just like, the doors are closing, man. You don't go in. It's just like the clock hasn't started yet.
But, you know, I want to ignore the path of the between as much as I possibly can, because what matters is when I land on the other side and then get to do the fun things that I intend to do. And that's the way that I feel a lot of TTRPG exploration tends to feel.
And here's where I'm at in my life right now. I've been playing this game called Forspoken. And I've played The Witcher 3.
Yeah.
And I play a lot of games where it's like, I just like walking around the map.
Mm. Yep.
And when I'm running the games now I'm like, how do I make my map interesting? Because that's what I want to explore and have my players experience.
This is an interesting point, because Red Dead Redemption 2, the world feels living and breathing mm-hmm. during the story. Afterwards, when you stop running into random stuff happening as much, the game like drastically shifts and you're like, it's empty.
Red Dead Online does not feel great.
Yeah, it just is like, this place is completely empty. I never felt this way playing it before. So maybe that's the thing, is like, you build out full mini arcs that people can run into, and then when you roll at them, it's like there's a classic one in Red Dead where you're riding your horse by, and a tree in a logging camp falls and it crushes someone's leg, and they're like, you have to help us get this thing off of him. And then like, they drag him out, and if you help him, then the guy's like, hey, I can't give you much, but I can give you a couple of these dollars. But then the rest of the group is like, that fucking foreman like has not been doing any of the safety stuff, and then like it can start a quest, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So but this is another thing around this stuff, is that usually when you're traveling, you're traveling to a quest, and usually that quest is time sensitive.
Exactly. And in a tabletop RPG, like if I'm playing Forspoken, I can do that when I have a couple of hours here and there. If we're playing in a group of five of us and we can come together, there's not time to really explore random things that I want to just go see, because you are having to also consider that you're using other people's time to do these things.
So my advice for the kind of chasing that feeling that you want is, it needs to be, your characters are representatives from this land, and they are going to a brand new place. I mean, not to promote colonialism or anything like that, but they need a new world. They need a reason to be like that. And you, because you are a GM, you could make that an actual like, yeah, this is definitely an uninhabited place, mm-hmm. or the other people who are there are also privateers like you. Or, you know, maybe there is a dead civilization.
But now, are you taking this as a pillar of the game? Because you're making the whole game this.
Well, you're talking about chasing that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I will.
In the games, but I want to end the games that we're already playing.
Yeah, I would say that is very hard to do because of the reasons that we're bringing up, mm-hmm. where, you know, you have a finite amount of time where you have managed to gather 4 to 7 people to play with you. And they all have, you know, their own story arcs that they hope to get through. You have an overarching story arc that you hope to get through. And, you know, one of the big problems with my games is we spend months in a single day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's and I don't, you know, I'm saying that's a problem. Others may feel that differently, and I don't care. I mean, I do, but, you know, we're not going to get into that here. You know, I think that that's kind of a problem, and I don't have a good fix for it because there's so much going on, and I want to make sure that we hit all those points. And adding in something like travel, like we just recently, we're currently several months into traveling a couple days journey.
Yeah.
That I could have done more exploration there, but at the same time, you all live in this area. You probably have some idea of what's, you know, I live in Boston. I haven't seen every inch of this, but I have an idea if mm-hmm. I go for a wander, which I like to do sometimes. I will probably find a very set, specific amount of things. There's nothing that's going to be so surprising to me. So that feeling of exploration that you get from a game like The Witcher or Forspoken or Red Dead, you know, it needs to have impact, and it needs to also not eat into your finite time. So I think it needs to become the focus.
I feel like maybe it's the thing is that we all run very narrative oriented games in that like there's a, like you said, there's like a next step to the story or whatever. And maybe where this kind of play would really shine is that like you helped this town, you're done or whatever. It's like, hey, you get a letter to, like, at your convenience, go talk to the mayor of this other town who wants to talk to you about something. And you can set off. But it's, like, several stops along the way. And then, like, you can have those, like, quick-timey type events that you've built. And then you can even roll them on a table if you want. Of, like, you're sort of, as your carriage is going, it's like you're not in any... It's not constantly like you're in the forest, you're about to die or whatever, but maybe you're just going along the road and like a guy runs out and he has manacles on. He's like, hey, guys, help me out. Like, I need you to break these off me and I'll give you something if you do. And then they can make this little decision. And then, you know, maybe that gives them a little information, a little bit of resources or whatever, but it doesn't obstruct them from continuing on.
But I mean, that still kind of gets into that problem of it. You were saying earlier that this is just something that happens along the road. Yeah. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
Like, not to knock. Like, obviously, that's an interesting thing that's happening along the road, but it doesn't quite get that sense of like exploration in my mind that we were talking about with the video games.
You know what actually would be great for this though is like to take a thing out of the video game map or like idea, and you have your map that you're busy, you know, we all love maps, but we have a map or whatever. Maybe, you know, that stuff comes on and then you like take a stamp out or whatever and you put like a mark on the map of the information where this guy gave you and you say like, there's something over there to explore if you want to, and then you're done.
Yeah.
And then that can become something that the characters are interested in later on or not. And you can make that like, you know, above board, like this has nothing to do with like the main quest that you guys are on. This is just something that's out there that you can explore if you want.
Yeah. I think this is also like a very important thing in running games is that I think a lot of people don't put downtime into their their stories and their narratives. It's like, this is going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. The next thing.
Yeah.
If you want to have the exploration in your game, you need to, okay, you fought the wizard. His coven's going to probably do something, but you have an undisclosed amount of time. What are you? You can't just wait and do nothing until it happens. So like, do you want to explore? Do you want to like look for stuff? Do you want to like prepare and, you know, find a magic item, look for rumors? Okay.
Yeah.
You need to, in order to do good exploration, you need to plan downtime in which the story takes a pause.
Yeah. So are we kind of landing on that this feels like less of a mechanical thing and more of just like a structure thing?
Both.
Yeah, I think it is both.
Yeah. You need to mix it.
Because like there's that time in Lakewood where Franco and Jackie were – they had a thing that they wanted to do because it was a downtime episode, but they wanted to take your sword and silver it or whatever it was. And I was like, the blacksmith's in another town trying to – basically my attempt there was like, this is kind of impossible. You don't need – you're not going to do this. They were like, we get a car and we drive. Yep. And so then it was like, okay, we're exploring this new town. I kind of on the fly made up this Best Buy, had like a unionization thing going on there. They had this whole thing, NPCs. They came back and it's still something that they once in a while will mention as like, oh, that was a great thing that you had. And that was exploration in that like I was basically just making up this sort of like thing that they found and then they interacted with it in the way they wanted. But it did come from a desire from the main quest of like, we need to get the sword better or whatever it was.
I mean, and that's just it. It's all about time. How much time are you willing to commit to this thing? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's great. Like I'm happy to commit that time. I'm in a game which I really enjoy. It's an online game that a friend runs. And, you know, we do tons of travel in this game. And we every single day is accounted for. And then there's a camping thing. He doesn't make us necessarily – he's not so particular about, like, finding the food. I couldn't tell you the last time any of us really focused on that, although sometimes it'll come up and then he, you know, says, yep, make sure to mark it off. Okay. I mean, yeah.
This is my dirty little secret about any sort of like item management like that, is that I'm like, someone's like, okay, mark that off your sheet. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I don't even ever even look at it whether I have this thing in my...
That's cheating.
It's not. It's just like, who cares whether or not like I have an empty flask on me or not? It's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know.
I'm just the DM who asked you to check. Cares.
But and I'll put this the other way, though. I try and think about it if I was in this position.
Yeah.
You know, because, Rio, I agree with you. I agree, but I also agree with Nick here.
Choose the perfect in between.
Well, I have a question for you. If I put on you, does Valen have this thing?
And what thing?
I don't know. Like,
don't be, you got it.
Okay.
This is a specific thing.
All right.
Be specific
all right. About right, it. Now, get you. Right now, Valen was in a tunnel. And
does he have enough torches to walk?
Yeah,
8 hours.
Yeah, let's
or
say that, like, let's say that I impressed you. What are you eating for tonight? What are you eating tonight?
Grubs. Rats that I find.
Great. This is an empty tunnel. What are you eating tonight?
I guess ooze I'm not has eating. Been devouring.
Right. And like, but did that actually, is well, that, is that,
but again, like if you're running that game, you have to be like, okay, you have to give me a chance to buy rations. You have to be like, oh, we're
there
going on an adventure.
Is. And that's the problem because like, so for example, last time in your game, you know, we were doing the exploration and then we were suddenly hunting for things. My character 100% would have had the foresight, but I, the player, in that moment, we didn't talk, we didn't really rationalize. Like, I didn't know that we were going to go into a travel mode. I thought we were going into the town, and I believe that's also what was set up for the expectation, because you had set, like, a, you know, and that's fine, things change.
Nothing changed. I said we're going to be going.
Everything's perfect and unchanging.
We're going to be leaving from Pelock, and you're going to be going to Sumner.
Yeah,
and then we did the game where you were going to Sumner.
Yeah, I read that, interpreted that as we would be in Sumner.
Well, that's not things changing. That's you misinterpreting.
Okay, sure. And things changed for me because read it differently and I understood it differently, and so I didn't think, oh well, I need to ask the DM. Can I have time to go buy these things and slow this down or really, and I could have done those probing aspects, but in that moment I was just like, oh, well, why the hell would my wizard who is a smart person and knows that there's this much time between days, you know, travel things.
Why was that?
Right.
Because I said, okay, everyone get your supplies.
Here's
we're
my
about
question.
To leave Hemlock and start going to Sumner. And no one in the group was like, yeah, let me make sure that I have stuff. I was like, oh, that's fine. If you don't have it, you don't have it. But
here's
I said,
my...
gather supplies before we go.
Right. And I'm saying that, like, and I apologize that I guess I didn't grasp that aspect.
What supplies were?
All right. You get where I'm going. You get where I'm going, man.
Shade is three more comments away from jumping across the table and strangling
I'm
you.
I'm just saying that, like, you know... At that same moment, it's like, but why wouldn't this character have that? Like, sometimes it's okay to shorthand that and just be like, of course your character has this thing. Like, on the same time, like, if we had had that conversation about Valen, you're in this tunnel, what do you do for food? I would have said, you know, we hand waved it. We just moved along and we didn't even.
Here's the other thing that I would say is like, what added, what. Because for me, the only time lack of supplies really comes in and makes a game more interesting is if it creates a moment for like an interesting interaction, right? But most of the times when it's like, oh, we don't have any rations, I'll go hunting. I roll a survival check. I find a deer. I bring it back. Yeah. We have food. Like for me, like the thing that would be more interesting would be like, maybe you start a trip and you just always set it to like high rations, and then depending on how long the trip goes, going back to like the timing, the clock of getting to the next place, like maybe you use that as a clock of like you're starting to run low on rations. You can't just keep exploring these woods anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Because for me, yeah, it's the same with gold. I never add gold to my sheet and I never take gold off my sheet. It always stays at zero. I really don't.
That's cheating. You're just cheating. game.
But this is the thing, is that I don't go around being like, I buy the most expensive things that I can all the time. I just am just like, what do I need? A lantern? 10 gold? Yeah, okay. And then when I get 100 gold, I don't add that to the sheet either. You know what I mean?
No! That's wrong! What the hell are you even doing?
It's the same thing for like in Candle Cove or whatever the game I'm making, like where you guys are like, I buy a dinner or whatever. I'm like, how much is in your bank account? I don't really do that just because I just feel like it isn't additive. You know what I mean? But I get your point that in like a survivalist game that would be
right.
Breaking.
And that's I'm with you on this. Yeah. It really depends on the
Matt
vibe. Rian's
about to jump across the table.
The vibe of the game. It depends on the vibe of the game and also what's trying to be achieved.
Yes.
I think spellcasting components are important.
Yeah.
However,
yeah, I never. Yeah.
I know. And I would say there is like a limit to that. Is it a revivify spell where we're going to need a diamond? Yeah, we may need to talk about whether or not you have that diamond.
Yeah.
Great example. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, to that point, too, it's like I only really enforce those when something interesting comes, like when a player does something that I think is really interesting to control a battlefield, like use a silent spell so that someone can't use a somatic part of their spell or whatever. It's like, oh, that's interesting. You're thinking about the game and like the process of casting the spell.
Yeah.
Do I ever go like, do you have three like heron eggs and a sack of ashes with you? Oh, then you can't cast like fly or whatever.
So
it's
that
like
what you need? No.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. It's just like, for me, that's just like, why? I don't know.
So, but like,
you would do it if you would like, randomly asking for a spell component you've never asked for, that's one thing.
Ah.
You have to set up the tone early.
So that's, yeah. And that's the other thing is like, it's so easy to sometimes, like, if you're changing things, to sometimes miss that. You're right. You need to be consistent in
yes.
this.
Because Franco did this during Argot. He would ask for spell components during, but to me, like, there's a line between doing. For me, I'm just I struggle to find the fun way to do that, because in a lot of ways it kind of feels like a way for the DM to say no, which I think is a good, like, it is needed sometimes, but at the same time, like, it should always be like a yes but or something,
right?
So I don't know.
I'm watching Fantasy High, trying to catch up so I can get up to the current season. I'm in season two of Fantasy High. A character dies, an NPC dies, and one of the players cast Revivify, and Brinley Mulligan mentions, oh, well, of course, you need that diamond. Actually, I think the player mentioned it, and Brennan said, which I assume you probably got, just make sure to remove the amount of gold for however many diamonds you want to stock up on. We didn't talk about that at this time, but this moment, your characters aren't fools, but you players are not thinking about this. And I think that there is a time for hand waving. That's all I
also think it'd be interesting to use resources in a different way to make them more valuable. Like gold to me to buy, pythons and whatevers doesn't really feel, it just like, because it almost never comes up in game anyway.
Yeah.
And when you would never cover a monster in oil and light it on fire rather than have someone cast firebolts. Like, right. It's just like not, it doesn't really work in that way. So I would be like, it'd be way more interesting if you bought levels or something. And that's that's where gold becomes super valuable.
Well, no, you can train levels. That's part of the downtime.
But that's what I'm saying is like, you could like say, hey, we're not doing like a milestone or we're not doing a experience counter. You can buy a level for 1,000 gold or something.
Back to 1E.
Yeah, exactly.
If Franco were here, I'm sure he would talk about how, because
OSR does that, but you buy equipment or whatever.
Exactly, all of that. Yeah. And I think, interestingly, I think Franco does have on your side about the inventory management, but I think he also dips his toe, and I think you might dip your toe occasionally in this too, of like, yeah, of course I have that. Because of course you do.
Why wouldn't I have a cot? You know, that kind of stuff. Like, I have a backpack. Do you have a backpack? Did you buy a backpack? Like, it's just like that kind of stuff is hard. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why, like, I mean, in one game, you gave, like, everyone a bag of holding or whatever. But it was just
I do that almost in every game.
Just to be like, you just have a bag. You just have a bag that things go into.
But exploration, to me, does require a certain level of like inventory management.
Yeah.
I do agree.
Yeah.
So I think that there's probably a middle ground where you can like, for me, for someone who doesn't like managing that kind of stuff, maybe there's like a broader
way.
I'm
so fucking mad at you.
I've never once abused it.
The money does kind of, I know you wouldn't abuse it, but the money aspect.
No, doing it at all is abusing it.
Bill Stabbums ended the game with one pair of magical items that was found without buying them. Like, I never bought anything that would become magic. I never bought anything to break the game.
I didn't know you were going to take Good Bear away from me until that night. Well, that first night.
That was a weird one because I didn't even think about it. I was like, oh, we're going to be a survival game. And you're like, oh, I've got Good Bear. It's like, well, that fucks everything because the whole, like, all of these groups trade in rations.
By the way, if Franco's character used Good Bear, is that still the same thing now in this current game? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Okay.
You have good berries, you have good berries.
All right. So that will solve our food issue going forward.
Sure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then there's like...
Then I'm going to make sure to ask Frank to prepare good berries.
Yeah, there's just like... for me, I feel like inventory management doesn't super matter. And it's also
Because I'm preparing to go to like food preparing as boons.
Yeah.
So like... If you have certain ingredients, you can get certain meals prepared.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's where the foraging aspect comes from. So I'm just like trying to train.
Yeah.
The camping part of the game. I want camping to be like combat. It's like, okay, this is just something. Okay, we're now setting up camps. We have to forge. We're gonna have to stealth and do that kind of.
You know what? I like that. That idea there is solid.
All my ideas are solid.
Well, of course they are.
Thank you.
But I want to talk about this particular one, which is that it is an encounter.
Mm-hmm.
There is a mini game behind it. So there's a combat encounter. There's a mini game. It's the fighting. There's a camping or exploration encounter. Mm-hmm. There's a mini game. I like that framing. Okay. That's good.
And also, I think that also comes into like where, like to Shade's point, like where do you draw the line? Like, does encumbrance matter? Like,
usually on paper.
Because
trying to learn. But I use D&D Beyond.
But like encumbrance becomes a thing of like, I'm carrying 50,000 gold coins. It's like, that's pretty heavy. That's metal. You know what I mean? And or like, I found a set of armor, I throw it in my inventory. Like, I think all of us in the Waterdeep have a rapier of like vampire finding or something.
Yeah. It's a couple like, of you do, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like,
I don't have a rapier.
People are holding multiple.
I'm half naked with an oversized spear.
Except sometimes you have an anchor.
I found that anchor.
Yeah, but I'm just saying encumbrance. Come into it, right?
Because I dropped it
after flying 50 feet up or whatever.
Yeah,
I just think that like it's hard. I think for me, when it comes to mechanical stuff in homebrewing, I would much prefer homebrewing a survivalist mechanic rather than following any sort of like individual tracking mechanic. But that's my personal thing. Yeah. I just have a brain that doesn't.
You're not
like
gonna
that.
Do it. Huh? You're like, oh, I have this. It's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Because if it's something that I know you don't have, I'll just be like, you don't have that.
You know what I mean? Hate you.
If you're like, I take out my bazooka, I'll be like, you don't have a bazooka. And you'll be like, okay. And that's fine. But if you're like, I take out a flashlight, I'll be like, yeah, okay. That makes sense.
So I'll put this on another shoe. More recently, since playing things like Monster of the Week, Rio, you have been asking for more creative uses of your spells.
That's true.
Hold on, I might sneeze.
Oh, that look was sneezing, not anger.
Okay, I think I'm okay.
So what is the difference there? Now, obviously, like, there's some DM fiat going on. There's...
What you thought?
So you because you were playing Monster of the Week War for a while, came back to my 5e game and were like, hey, I know this isn't how this spell works.
No.
Let me do something wildly different.
This isn't how the spell's written. I didn't say I don't know how this isn't how it works. This is not how it's written.
Okay.
Because it could work that way, and that's the crux of the question.
Well,
does the spell work this way?
Right. But what you're
not based on the writing of a very particular use of it. Uh-huh.
But the writing tells you what?
Words.
And those words are conveying
a way that the spell could function.
Does function, yes.
A function of the spell.
And so you're asking for additional functions.
I'm asking to use the function in varying ways.
Yes. And I would just say that it's just that's a step away from, well, of course I have a coffee mug or something like that.
This, dear listener, is what happens when two rules lawyers are locked in combat.
That's a straw man argument. Those things are not related
at all.
You're
not wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sure that we're going to come back to this as an episode. We tripped into a hole of like inventory management and stuff. I feel like we should probably do a full episode when Franco's back, because you need someone on your side. And I feel like Franco would be that person. And I'm fine being alone, and Shade being in the middle feels right. So we will talk again about this another time. But in the meantime, if you want to support Tabletop, you can go to tabletoppod.com, send us a comment, and we will answer it live on air. Also, if you go to patreon.com/tabletopped, you can join our Patreon either for free, for $1, for $5, or $10.
Or just tell Nick you paid him a dollar.
Yeah, or just...
And don't actually take the dollar out of your bank account.
Yeah, just send me a message saying like, hey, I paid you a dollar. Where's that sweet, sweet content? And I'll be like, well, okay, I'll just give it to you. Please don't do that. I have a hard time keeping track of anything in my
really.
Life. But we will see you next week for another episode of Tabletopped.